Hello, Sagittarius, and welcome to Inner Peace, your 2026 spoken word readings from Planet Waves. I'm Eric Francis, your astrologer for the next hour or so, here with a second look at your chart, maybe a more intuitive or freeform reading. The whole writing thing is very structured, huh? It has to be logical. Three proofreaders have to go over it. And there's very sharp lines between right and wrong. Not always how the world works. My impression, looking at your chart again, it's been a little while. And I've scanned in a new one to go with this reading. Not new, but I've made some annotations to it. Is that the theme of your astrology this year is getting out of some form of confinement? Some kind of psychic or ideological or social, relational, some form of having outgrown a space, having difficulty expressing yourself within that space and actually having something that you want to create, evolve, develop. And there's quite a bit of internal pressure. And you may not be sure where the confinement impulse is coming from, the thing that you are pushing back against, the thing that you are seeking to be free of. And it looks to me like it has a lot to do with family. And then on top of that, family concepts of what a relationship is supposed to be, and you need to have an idea about yourself without these confining influences of other people of the past. This is not, nobody thought this up last week, and it's amazing how much the world seems to change, how much progress the world seems to make. I mean, gosh, golly, you can have a therapist on your phone for free. Nothing really changes too much. I mean, it seems to. It seems to. The things that make life difficult for people seem to evolve and morph in some way. But really, it comes down to the ways that we're imprinted by our families in the first few years of life, and the emotional capacity that leaves us with. And I'm always talking about the digital effect. This is where we're going to see a version of the digital effect over a couple of generations, because the people who are coming up now are coming up in the context of others who have been imprinted by and have had their essentially their limits set by concepts in the digital environment. Then they're going to raise children who are similarly situated. So I don't know how old you are, or what version of reality was being impressed upon you, or your specific family situation. However, I see the indicators, the markers. So let's go back to the egg on Sagittarius, and I will again share with you my central theory about what Sagittarius is about. I think it is, for reasons I will get into in a matter of minutes here, the most distinctive sign, extremely important in terms of the way in which the physical properties of Sagittarius relate to the psychological and spiritual kind of assembly of you know, natives born with a strong Sagittarius signature. And there's a lot of ways this can work its way into the chart, but especially if you're sun and rising. I mean, this is why this kind of astrology works at all. And the Sag moon, that's I'll touch on that. Sag moon is a little bit different. It picks up the energies of Sagittarius differently, coming through the lunar body than the solar body, or this kind of a conceptual presentation known as the ascendant. So what's going on in Sag is that there are two deep space points, and the deep space points are late comers to astronomy. One of them was discovered around the time of Pluto in 1930. That's the galactic center. There was not, it's hard to believe that there was not even an understanding that we lived in a galaxy that had a distinctive structure, and that there were lots of them. I mean, Messier was cataloging galaxies as nebulae, clusters of hundreds of billions of stars. He was classifying as gas clouds. I mean, it's funny now. Turns out that we live in a galaxy. The galaxy is a big spiral. They say, no one's actually counted, I promise, 300 billion stars in our spiral. Spiral has radio sources at the center. There's a black hole. The black hole is at just above 27 degrees Sagittarius. It has a name, Sagittarius A asterisk, pronounced Sagittarius A star. This is news. This is, in the history of humanity, less than 100 years is like 5 minutes. So there's the center of our galaxy located in Sagittarius. Then there's another feature. It is called the Great Attractor, and it is you might call it a convergence point of about 100,000 galaxies. So yours is really the only sign that has not only galaxies and black holes influencing it. And if you look up a guy named Alex Miller Mignon, he just goes by Alex Miller, you can find these black holes are splayed all over the place. He gets his information from Sedgwick, Phil Sedgwick. There's all black holes all over the place. But this is something much more important going on in Sagittarius. And that is that not only is the center of our galaxy located in Sagittarius, and it spreads out over, I don't know the exact number of degrees. In the summer, it looks like it spreads out easily over 90 degrees of the sky, something like that. This big streak going diagonally. That in the middle of that, that's the galaxy. In the middle of that is the black hole and multiple radio sources. Difficult to see, by the way, because of all the dust. The galaxy is very dusty. So we start getting into all the properties of the galaxy when we start talking about Sagittarius. And then right nearby, approximately maybe 13 degrees away, is this convergence point of all of the local galaxies, all of them. That's 100,000 galaxies. In the Virgo group, in the local group, and then a bunch of others that people didn't think were connected. Well, this fellow, Brent Tully, who I've interviewed, and a couple of his astrophysicist buddies at the University of Hawaii just figured this out. They looked at the Doppler shifting and the way the galaxies were moving, and they figured out, oh, there's a lot of galaxies converging toward the Great Attractor, which is in Sagittarius. So it's the central convergence point of all the stars in our galaxy plus all the galaxies in our neighborhood, both in Sagittarius. That is not a normal sign. A normal sign is Taurus. There is a bull. The bull is the shape of some stars that you really have to use your imagination to see. A bull? Really? Or two fishes in Pisces? Well, it verges on ridiculous. But Sagittarius, the Great Attractor, and the Galactic Center, and then, you know, 500, 1,000 years ago, they're saying, well, Sagittarius, far away things. Cosmic, things of a cosmic nature. Oh, yeah. And we didn't discover one till 1930 and then discover the other one till around 1980. Fantastic. So, but what this says is that your experience on Earth has nothing to do with anybody else's. I mean, it's as if you're a visitor here. I mean, you're not. And I think given all of this cosmic stuff, you know, hundreds of thousands of stars in the Milky Way, hundreds of billions and whatever. As Carl Sagan said, billions and billions. A Googleplex. The ruling planet of Sagittarius in the esoteric astrology system is the Earth. Oh, that's very interesting. So it's the most cosmic sign, and it is the sign associated with the Earth. You think, oh, that would clearly be, you know, Virgo or something. No, nope. Ruler, esoteric ruler of Sagittarius is the Earth. So there are these contradictions of scale associated with Sagittarius. And it's difficult for you to have a sense of scale because it must be very compelling to live with this sense of, you know, if we consider the properties of our sign or rising sign having something to do with I am. I mean, and this is reasonable. This is not some stretch. I mean, it's possible to make up stories, but, you know, I'm Cancer rising. I'm pretty Cancerian. Like, I've been sitting in the house doing these readings since October. And Pisces, too. Pisces can be like, just stay home. Just stay home for 4 months. And just, you know, do it till it's done, right? These things describe us in some way. Well, what does it say about you that you have the convergence point of every galaxy near us associated with I am, and then all the stars in the sky, basically? It's kind of true, because all the stars in the sky are either in the Milky Way, or there are other galaxies. That's it. So as far as stars are concerned, they're all in the Milky Way. And the center of the Milky Way is right in Sagittarius. So what does that make you? Well, so what it makes you is having kind of more potential than you can actually do anything with on Earth, unless you find a way to really open up and activate who you are, to make contact with. And yet, how do you find, it's kind of the ultimate artist dilemma. How do you find a place for yourself on the Earth when you are stardust? You mean, basically, I mean, that's what it comes down to. We all are, but like, come on. The Great Attractor and the Galactic Center. So, what happens with Sag is, and I don't know if I got into this. I have been developing this line of thought for a while. If I got into it in inner light, maybe I did. That the Earth signs play a very important role, and so what happens is that Sagittarius has all this pure, like, an astounding amount of cosmic energy flow, which is creativity, which is Kundalini, which is Orgone, all pumping through, and you're identified with these factors that most people haven't even heard of. You know, who's heard of the Great Attractor? Even among astrologers, they've heard of the words, they don't know what it means. Most of them confuse it with the Galactic Center. Well, so you have to step down. There has to be, like in an electrical system, there are, right, just as the power's coming off the network, going into your house, somewhere nearby is a step-down transformer to get it down from like 11,000 volts down to, 120, right, basically, so you can actually, run a hairdryer, not be pumping all the energy of like a nuclear power plant into your hairdryer. The thing between you and it is a step-down transformer. In the Sagittarius chart, the earth signs serve as your step-down transformer. And there's a lot of important activity in the earth signs now. And a few other places. And you could almost think of everything going on in every other house and sign of your chart as taking part in that step down process, so that the energy that you are channeling can actually go somewhere. And you have to do a lot of consciousness raising to have it go there in an undistorted way, to have it be expressed in a way that is not burning you out, that is not flipping into its opposite, which is very possible. So let's go through some of the earth sign step-downs. One of them, the most immediate, obvious earth sign step-down is Capricorn in your second place. And that suggests that despite all this kind of freewheeling cosmic energy, you're going to tend toward tried and true values. I don't want to say conservative. I want to say what would be considered stable, practical, and leaning toward conservative, not like in the sense of, you know, picketing outside an abortion clinic, but, you know, conservative in the sense of reserved, proper, having a viewpoint that comports with the past. That's Capricorn in nature. And this means that there's likely to be a very strong family conformance streak running through you. Now, which is to say that the past often represents familial influences, grandparents, great-grandparents, parents, and so forth, going back quite a ways. And that serves to keep you in line, contained in a way. So you want to be contained? I don't know. I don't think so. But I think that you would not feel so stable, right? That's the issue. The issue is stability. So the earth signs provide, like they do for everyone, but especially they're plugged right into that point in the kind of structure of your chart where you're going to step down immediately, and you may finally figure out, like, oh, that's not really what I'm interested in. So fortunately, Pluto's blown through this territory over between 2008-2024, making a lot of room for you to express yourself, clearing out a lot of that past family baggage. But the problem situation is now that there's more family influences, and the thing is that these have to be managed carefully. They have to be managed consciously. The family influences I'm talking about in Capricorn are the family Hunger Games structure of three minor planets and a hypothetical. And I've gone over the themes a lot of places, and I'll include those articles, but suffice it to say for now that you're still referring to family influences in the past to determine what you think is right now. This needs to go. The people in the past were not confronted by the things that we're confronted by today. And I am not saying that certain values like a real measure of frugality and to comport yourself in a way that is appropriate to the situations that you're in. Okay, I mean, that's one thing. And then, if you're Matt Stone and Trey Parker, you go to the Oscars high on acid in drag. They're doing pretty good, right? Do the funniest guys ever. So there's only so much of that you want. Now let's go to another Earth-oriented place. That's the 10th. I think this is really where the biggest challenge comes in. 10th is Virgo. So this has always been one of those contradictions of Sagittarius. And you look at Sagittarians and, you know, they're big picture people and all this. But then they tend to also micromanage. So they're big picture people who micromanage. How do we see that in the chart? We see that big picture Sagittarius, great attractor, galactic center, managing, micromanaging Virgo on the 10th place. And right now, and for the probably, unless you're really young, teenager, the rest of your life, you're going to have Trans-Pluto, this thing called Trans-Pluto, this extremely Virgo-ish influence moving across Virgo that tends to behave just like all the stereotypes of, you know, uber-controlling, micromanaging Virgo. Only it's only being kind of conditioned and amplified through Virgo. What's actually going on is this thing called Trans-Pluto is creating a narrowness for how you express your reputation in the world. And, you know, everyone wants to be known. You are, not maybe not everyone, but in our world now, and look, if you make a contribution to society, you definitely want to be known for it. So the question is, how does your contribution to society get known when your concept of being known is so narrow? So here's another point of confinement. Trans-Pluto across the 10th in Virgo. Finally, Taurus in the 6th place. That's kind of, you know, the beauty and the challenge of Taurus is its conventionality. You know, these people have an Emily Post book up on their shelf and they're, you know, they refer to it. You know, it's to make sure they're not wearing white pants on the wrong day or something like that. And there's been some liberation here. You have been able to diversify the actual work that you do. Circumstances have compelled this. And probably of all the places where there's an earth sign, your day-to-day activity is in the best shape. Conventionality notwithstanding, I'm not arguing against conventionality. All I'm saying is that you need more room to express who you are, and we're going to find it. And we're going to find it in a couple of minutes. So Virgo and Cap, tight squeeze, both associated with family. Family Capricorn, second, very strong influence, and all these family points, Pholus, Quatuor, Ixion, Cupido. Family. 10th place, family, Virgo. Okay, this is a tight squeeze. This is a pastry bag with a little head on the end, a little too small for the big, giant, colorful swirls you want on the cake. Trans-Pluto, making it even smaller. Trans-Pluto, the feeling of looking at your potential through the reverse end of binoculars. You need to look through the magnifying end to bring the goal closer, not the other way around that pushes the goal further away. Taurus, conventionality, but that can work because Taurus wants more than that. Taurus wants a measure of real engagement, sensory engagement. So that's where you have the most freedom, I think, in these places is your work. And of course, you have total freedom to establish your own values, right? And this, a lot of things are driven by your values. So one of the things to do is just to keep checking and making sure that the things you say are important to you and the priorities you act on are actually coming from you rather than coming from antiquity. Okay, so now those are all places to, you know, get something done. But there's other places to get something done too. And one of them, let's go through the ones where there is an active process of pushing back, rebelling. Okay, so another conventional versus idiosyncratic, right? Conventional versus original tension can be found in Aquarius, the way Aquarius lands in your chart, in the third place, how you think. So the third place is your style of thought and your style of communication. You have Aquarius there. So there's an element of high intelligence. There is an element of being very good at blending in. See, part of the problem is you're so good at blending in that you get really fabulous at it, and then you can't get out of that. So we're getting out of it. Your third house, Aquarius, contains the tension between your originality and everyone kind of creating a force field around you that says, well, you just can't be too original. So now we've got Pluto in place in the third. This is going to amplify that contention between your originality, need, desire, instinct to stand out, and then the collective around you, which is nothing more than society. But then, you know, aren't a lot of our friends just kind of normies, and we have to just love them anyway because they're our friends? And it's like, well, you know, have you thought about it this way? Well, no, I haven't actually. So you're that influence, and they're that influence on you to kind of keep you in line. But with Pluto there, there's no stopping you now. You're going to have to embody your originality and your thoughts that contain the impulse for change. Pluto Aquarius third. Thoughts that contain the impulse for deep change and deeper and more meaningful ideas. Oh, okay. Nothing wrong with that, except that, like, people get a little twitchy around that. And, I don't know where I found this. I listened to a lot of Marshall McLuhan reruns from the 1970s. And when he went to publish his most famous book, Understanding Media, the publisher said, well, most new books contain 10% new material maximum. 10%. One idea out of 10 in most books is some form of a new idea. It's probably being a little bit generous. The publisher said, your book is 50% new ideas. Oh, that's a lot. You need to be 50% new ideas. Definitely more than 10%. See, because your whole psychic structure is like 99% new ideas. How much can you express? Well, when we start running it through the family filters of Capricorn and Virgo and the conventionality filter of Taurus, you kind of squeeze down to, well, you've got 99% new ideas and you can only express 5% of them. And one of those filters is also Aquarius, because you're very good at determining whether what you say is going to be socially disruptive, and you don't want it to be. But that value needs to be reevaluated. And I think more than that, I would suppose that Pluto is just going to drive lines of thought in your consciousness that you have no choice but to express. So you have the unstoppable kind of soul sonic force of Pluto working its way through a place where you think, write, express ideas, buy and sell things, all that matters of the third, the immediate local environment that you live in, you become this energizing force in all those areas. And in a sense, to use a word that I really can't stand, an influencer. That's perfect. Pluto, third house Aquarius, an influencer. But it doesn't mean that you're going to, you know, suddenly start a TikTok about bed sheets and have like 20 million followers in the first 5 minutes, because who knew people were this curious about bed sheets? What it means is that you will have influence in anything that you say or do, and it's your job, I guess you could say, to make sure that that influence is spiritually sound and in accord with your values, not the values of other people, not the values of those who either you used as your excuse to step down, or who's just decided, well, you got to do that, you can't be so wild. Or, depending on how many retrograde planets you have, it was just the thing to do because you were environmentally sensitive. We're going to get to that theme of environmental sensitivity in a second. All right, so that's the third house. And this, by the way, best expressed in writing, like actual, you know, structured writing. And if you do that, if you devote yourself over the long term, and which means every day, but over the long term, you're going to find out you have some real breakthroughs, that you are actually able to use writing to channel this astounding innate cosmic knowledge that you contain. Now, it's best to not, like, you know, declare yourself the innate container of cosmic knowledge and get Gene Houston to endorse your book, but you can do some real stuff. You've got something to say. So I suggest you get about saying it. All right, next place where there is some need to break free. How about this one? Let's go for houses 4 and 5 together. Pisces, fourth. The implication, I love this about Sagittarius, the implication of Pisces, fourth, is that your home, the fourth house, is the cosmos, Pisces. Now, Sag represents the cosmos, but Pisces, you could think of Sagittarius represents everything in this dimension that we can see, including all those galaxies floating toward the middle of Sagittarius and things we can perceive with special instruments like X-ray telescopes and things like that. But Pisces represents all the other dimensions of the cosmos that we can't actually perceive and see. Plus, there's a couple of stars that people think look like two fishes. Look, even if the stars don't look like two fishes, they got that much right. Your home is an even bigger cosmos than the one that you would seem to contain. This does present you with a bit of a paradox. There's a little bit of a, because like, wow, you contain the biggest things in the known universe. Oh, but then there's even bigger things, and you live there as if you are, can almost see you sitting on the shore of like the biggest ocean in the universe, up in a lifeguard chair that goes up like 50 feet, and you're looking out over the horizon. Planets are leaving the fourth, and what that's going to do is leave you more free to be able to feel what you feel. Thinking what you think isn't enough. You have to be able to feel what you feel as well as think what you think. So Neptune's about to move out in a couple of days. Saturn's going to move out a few days after that. The two are going to form a conjunction in the fifth place. That's going to be the next subject. So the removing of Saturn and Neptune from the fourth presents you with more emotional freedom, plain and simple. And the ability better to feel accurately what you're feeling, because in your case, neither Neptune nor Saturn promote the accuracy of what you're feeling. it's hard to get a good read on yourself. It's going to be easier. And to move Saturn and Neptune into the fifth, very helpful. Here's why. The fifth place, and there's a lot going on here, is Aries. And it wants expression. The fifth wants experience and expression. Experience that's expressed. Expression that's experienced. This thing with the fifth is always about it being a real thing, not concept. Fifth is not the house of art theory. The fifth is the house of where you make the art. The fifth is the house of where you play the game. Actually, whatever the game is, water skiing or football or whatever the game is, bungee jumping, that's where you play the game. The fifth is where you actually take the risk. So this is very interesting. So in a sense, well, everything is going on in the fifth house, and you're a fifth right now. Not everything, but for the moment, the greatest show on earth is happening in Aries right now. And that's the conjunction of Chiron and Eris, and then soon to be immediately in Feb 19th or something, the conjunction of Saturn and Neptune. And so here is where we get into what I think is, you know, I've just been whining about the Virgo in the 10th and Capricorn in the 2nd, and that's so Saturnian and so family, and Aquarius is also family controlled and very conformist and all that stuff. And the 4th is also very family. Because it's the fourth, it's the line of the fathers, and it's the family household and all this stuff. Okay, but what's really going on with Sag is you got to be an artist. You're going to constantly seek yourself as an artist. It's like, imagine somebody is deep down a cowboy. They got to get out to the range. You can't, I mean, you know, I guess you could be kind of an urban cowboy, but that, I mean, a cowboy. I mean, you want to ride horses and lasso bucking broncos and all that stuff. You got to get out on the range. And for you, getting out on the range means getting into a state of mind where you really can discover who you are by expressing who you are. You can experience the process of self-formation through the making of art. That's what artists are. They're not just people who can do paint by numbers without the printed board, right? That's kind of a concept of, this is going around. This is going around. A lot of suburban ladies have this idea that if they can paint without the little numbers, you know, they can paint without paint by numbers, then they're an artist. Well, no, that's not exactly it. It's not, you're being an artist is not about perspective. You know, it's not about, like, you know, can you draw a hand accurately? That's part of it. It's kind of like being an astrologer is not about being able to recite all the meanings of the places of, like, Venus. Venus and Aries is this. You know, Venus and Taurus is this. It helps to have those things. Being an astrologer is about, in some way, being connected to the cosmic order. You're going to get a much more accurate reading if you don't know jack squat about Venus and Gemini, but you're connected to the cosmic order. This is how there are so many astrologers that have limited technical ability, for example, like Isabel Hickey, but she's was very good at just being connected to the cosmic order. So for you, you find expression of all the connection points through creative activity that dares you to be someone different from who you were yesterday. That's Aries. And the whole connection of Chiron and Eris is very much about waking up from the way that the human race has been lulled to sleep by electricity. The story of Aries for the last century has been the story of where humanity's awareness and sense of self and personal being meets electricity. You know, well, I didn't read that in Linda Goodman. I read the Patrick Walker horoscope every day for 20 years. I never saw him mention that Aries was a battleground of where human individual consciousness meets the world of electricity. Well, yeah, we've all been fried out of our individuality, and that's all the culty tribalism and all that bullshit. But Chiron conjunct Eris is waking TF up. It is getting fully aware, alert, and hip to who you are, and because it's in your fifth house, you will know that you're being hip to who you are, because you're going to want to express who you are in some way that's very likely to be very different than the other ways you've wanted to express yourself, mostly conditioned by, for example, Virgo. Oh, can't shine too much. You know, must remain behind the scenes and do the work. The work's got to get done. Somebody's got to make lunch. The fifth is much bolder. It's much more dynamic. Aries. It's like, you know, let's make a war. But this is not war. This is like, let's make an art studio. Making the art studio, reiterated. Let's make an art studio because I am discovering who I am and I must cultivate this understanding. I must continue to build on this reality of who I am in an expressive, dynamic way that goes on all the time. That's the purpose of the art studio. That whatever that metaphorical art studio is, and you might quite well benefit from cleaning out the attic, the basement, or big closet, or a little room, or a porch, or something, and setting it up for creative experience. Now, you get a big delivery of from the local art supply store, or you know whatever Lowe's, in the form of provisions. Saturnian and Neptunian coming into Aries. You can think of those as, first of all, resources, supplies, chemicals for the chemistry set, paints for the painter, plaster for the sculptor, stone, whatever, and inspiration and ideas, all of which are going to contribute to this thing that gets underway. It may already be underway, but it's very likely to accelerate of this rapid self-discovery process that leads to expression that requires resources. Whatever those resources are, psychic resources, spiritual resources, or lots and lots of, you know, cardboard or gesso or whatever. The supplies that you need to do something with, materials. And again, spiritual materials and materials, all in the fifth house. And remember, you know you're in the fifth because it feels a little risky. Let's do one more fire sign. And then, because I'm looking at the timing of the section. So you have a very powerful point of expression in all of the fire signs. And the fifth is one, and you know you're in the fifth because you feel creative, but you're taking risks. Okay, last fire sign, Leo, ninth place, spirituality. The beauty of Sagittarius is you don't need religion. You are inherently humanitarian. This is a little like... I'm not suggesting that, you know, you become a devotee of Rudolf Steiner, but I love the concept of anthroposophic, which means the study of the knowledge of humanity is your religion. It's a perfectly good religion for a visitor from far, far away, right? Like yourself. And this is, you've got a lot of energy going through here. And Jupiter gets there in the second half of the year, which basically will spark and fuel and fire your spiritual quest for, let's say, the underlying nature of humanity and the underlying nature of your humanity. Because you've spent a lot of time believing what people told you about yourself. Well, what if you just forget all that stuff? You're not going to offend anybody. Just set all that stuff aside and actually figure it out. That sounds like fun. Oh, I wish I was a Sagittarius. Okay, here's a little more from Interstellar. Yellow noise and ambient. keep forgetting to link this. It's a 10-hour loop of yellow noise with those beautiful ambient incursions. And if I had to say that, this would be the sound of Sagittarius. That's what the... If you were to point a microphone at the Great Attractor, a microphone at the Galactic Center, it might feel like that. And by the way, if you live any place with a view of the horizon and you see that streak going diagonally across the sky, depending on your hemisphere, if you're from the northern hemisphere, you're going to see this in the summer. That's about you. Get a pair of binoculars and look through the little end going out toward the big end and check out what that business is about. I think the galaxy is the greatest, friendliest thing. Our beautiful home, the spiral barred galaxy known as the Milky Way. Okay, so the so Sagittarius seems to be walking the line between Earth and fire. Obviously, it's a fire sign ruled by the Earth. Then we see the ways in which the Earth signs, Capricorn, Taurus, and Virgo, condition you and step you down. That's option one. And look, the practical side of this is that no idea can be brought into expression unless it is somehow run through Earth signs. The concept of the Earth signs. I'm not saying, you know, you've got to go out on the streets of New York City and grab the nearest, you know, Capricorn and, make them do something. That could be fun. But I mean the concept of the Earth, because wealth comes from the Earth. We express ourselves on Earth. We live on the Earth. We walk around on the Earth. We eat Earth. But then there's the limiting factor. And you get past the limiting factor by entering your fellow fire signs, in particular Aries and Leo. Aries as artistic expression, Leo as a kind of humanism. Your religion is understanding the true nature of the human race. That's also a Leo thing. It's an Aries thing, but it's also a Leo thing in my view. I think Leo, despite being symbolized by a cat, is a very human kind of a sign. And I mean, it's human in the way that cats are weirdly human. Okay, now, next thing. We talked about one of the air signs, the one where your thought patterns are contained, that being Aquarius, and the way in which there is tremendous tension between the conformist side of your nature and the individualistic side of your nature. This is a theme. It's like no matter how you shake up the Sagittarius chart, cut it up in pieces, and randomly put them together, it's still going to say the same thing. There's more air sign going on big time. Your opposite sign is an air sign. Your opposite sign is Gemini. It is a pretty basic spiritual astrology to work with the opposing signs as one complete system, one integrative system where you are, in a sense, embracing and embodying your opposite. And that opposite is this, it is actually a human sign, the first human sign, because there's two people depicted, the little kid, twins, and Gemini. And it's quite a humorous juxtaposition between Sag and Gemini. You've got Sag, like, who are the twins in Sagittarius? Oh, the Great Attractor and the Galactic Center. Well, who are the twins in Gemini? Well, they're just two little kids sitting on the kitchen floor jabbering away in the secret language of twins that nobody else can understand. This implies with Sagittarius that you're looking for your twin in human form. The whole twin flames thing is twin souls. This is very Sagittarian kind of a thing. And if you think of it in terms of Sagittarius being this visitor from far away who's always trying to find expression in the ordinary human world, that's perfect. Then comes Uranus. So there's two, not just Uranus, there's two major influences. Now, before I go there, I just want to add one little thing that might be helpful, which is that the seventh place, the opposite sign, seventh place, is often considered the house of relationships. But all the houses address relationships. The seventh addresses partners, including potential marriage partners, business partners, and open enemies. I think that's hilarious. But it makes sense. The seventh also represents the environment that you see. If you were to wear a kind of a visor that restricted your view above, and then a visor below that restricted your view downward, and you were left with maybe, let's say, imagine like a 30-degree view from top to bottom, and you turn your head from side to side, that's the seventh house. It's what you're looking right at eye level. And it represents not only partners, but your partnership with the total environment that you can see on that angle. That you're just looking around and seeing storefronts and people and taxi cabs and whatever. Like, do they have any, still have taxi cabs? Whatever is at that eye level, and then you can, you know, look up a little bit and down a little bit, but not too much. That's the seventh house. Now comes Uranus. So there's big influence coming in, and it's going to come in super duper strong. And so Uranus is a disruptive influence. When you hear like tech people say, "Well, we've got to disrupt it," what they're saying is we've got to be Uranian. We've got to, you know, figure, you know, make a way to kind of blow things up. That's very Uranian. And this is, so it's a chaotic influence. It's chaotic in a whole different way than Eris. Uranus is more overtly chaotic. Uranus is a directly, it is an influence that you can pretty much look right at and you can see what it is, and it's going to be in year seven. So in your case, it represents people who are, let's say, interesting, but they're also unconventional. They're potentially erratic, and they may be very, very, very brilliant and inventive in Gemini. Uranus in Gemini is a whole different Uranus than Uranus in Taurus. It's much more overtly driven to, using a very tired word, innovate. And boy, is there innovation under Gemini, Uranus and Gemini. It's crazy. The computers we have on our desks today are going to look like quaint antiques, like old wooden radios in 7 years. Then there's another influence that's entered Gemini. It's going to be there not for 7 years like Uranus, but for 60 years, and that is Sedna. And now Sedna is too subtle to be appreciated by, you know, most mortals and most astrologers. But Sedna is one of those influences, and there are several, that describes what's going on deep in the deep background. And it represents your connection to, your sensitivity to, your ability to get information, meaning a map of reality, a sense of the whole environment. And in Gemini, it is the mental environment. So while you're channeling in the Great Attractor and the Galactic Center, another version of the step down of that is, well, but what's the normal human environment, what people actually talk about every day, and when, you know, because you're usually not thinking about the thing, you know, 100,000 galaxies being drawn in your direction, or, 300 billion stars, which have a central gravity point in your direction. No, they're talking about going to the store, and they're talking about gossip, and they're, whatever the little twins giggling, sitting on the kitchen floor in their secret language of twins, the idioglossia, whatever they're talking about. And you want that. There's something about that that you want. There's something about like, oh, that's the human experience. I am, you know, I am the cosmic queen or the, space explorer who landed on Earth. What's it like to be a little kid? Okay. So the important thing to know if you're a visiting scholar in the case of Sagittarius, that's a funny way to put it, a visiting scholar here on Earth, is that humans tend to have very ordinary concerns, and they tend to be, especially in our time, very mental and not very experimental, except they're about to kind of become very, very experimental because of Uranus. Your job is to always have your ear to the ground and be listening, or be like the guy in the book Gifts of Unknown Things by Lyle Watson, where there's a, it's on this island it's fictional. It may exist, but there's a fictional version of it in this, but it's a wonderful book, Gifts of Unknown Things by Lyle Watson. And there's a fisherman, there's like the old man, oldest fisherman. They paddle the boats out for a while, and then he jumps off the side of the boat and goes underwater and sinks down a few feet and is real quiet and listens to where the fish are. He can hear the fish. So they know which way to go to find the fish to get food to eat. That's you with Sedna in Gemini. Only the water is air, the water is mental, meaning the total environment. And just as a word of caution, Pluto in fellow air sign Aquarius is likely to create a distortion. So you will only be able to jump off the side of the boat and into the water of the mental sphere if you'll be able to hear the fish if you're not trying to decide where the fish are in advance. And this, by the way, falls under one of the headings of Pluto and Aquarius I haven't mentioned here in yet, but that is that the entire theme of Aquarius, in my view, is know when you don't know. And this becomes especially crucial with Pluto, because Pluto in Aquarius is quite capable of not knowing when it doesn't know. And if you then therefore have to be bigger than this and have the foresight and the insight to know when you don't know. And the way to know when you don't know is to open up to the mental environment with an open mind. That's Sedna. And there are loud influences in the mental environment. One of them is Pluto in Aquarius. That's freaking deeply dominating. Next is going to be Uranus in Gemini. That's kind of all figure and no ground. It's going to be very, very, very distracting. And then the third air sign, that would be Libra, contains this point called M87. Did not draw into the Sagittarius chart. And that too is one of these prodigiously huge things. You have this tendency to be able to tap into prodigiously huge things in prominent ways, but that has to be scaled down and moved out of the way for you to have the benefits of Sedna. And the benefits of Sedna is going to basically be, if you listen, if you're tuned in, which you can be, quiet the mind and tune in a little bit, you will know where you are at all times. The most important thing is to A, stop, open up your senses, not be distracted by the seeming thing dancing around in front of you, whatever it might be. And take it all in. What else we got going on here? We haven't said much about the water signs. So there's no pleasure in life without the water signs. And you happen to have the water signs connected to houses associated with pleasures, emotional, sexual, domestic. So the water signs for you fall, for example, the one right before, the sign right before yours is Scorpio. This is a little joke that the ancients threw into the Sagittarius configuration, which is that, well, underneath all this spirituality and underneath all this materialism, materialism meaning grounding of all this big great attractor galaxy stuff into the Earth realm. I don't mean materialism like, oh, you got to have two Mercedes in the driveway. I mean materialism in that you turn the idea into something, or you understand that that project costs money, or you understand that that all creativity is some form of shaping the Earth. But beneath and behind all that is this very powerfully sexual nature. Your whole hidden nature is sexual. There is a way it's possible to even frame the entire discussion of Sagittarius as in, well, seems awful cosmic. You know, there's these cosmic deep space points, and oh, then takes all that cosmic energy and tries to seem so normal about it. You know, like kind of well, it's not exactly the Men in Black. It's more like, I don't know, Taylor Swift. I mean, wouldn't Taylor Swift make a fantastic space alien? But like everyone likes to come to the stadium and see her wiggle around, right? So underneath that whole Taylor Swift act, there's a lot of sex power, and everyone knows it. But they just pretend that it's just this girl with a guitar wiggling around. So I'm suggesting that you get in touch with that, the interior drive, that cosmic biological drive, and that you will, I would, even though I'm not a predictive astrologer, predict that you're going to find a lot of success in doing that, in going in the other direction than values and ideation and, ooh, how cosmic that all is, and ooh, isn't that person an interesting weirdo? And just kind of take occasion every now and then to go straight to the sex part. And to understand that the reality of your sexual nature and of anyone's sexual nature is it completely defies logic, reason, social norms, relationship rules, religious beliefs, all this conditioning. It is what it fucking is. And you are who and what you are. And this is really the slightest shift of direction. It's a little bit like, oh, I'm looking that way, and now I'm just going to look the other way. And you get right into that. So if you find yourself in some kind of a frenzy, or if you find yourself over-efforting, if you find yourself uncertain of purpose, see what happens when you connect to that secret underlying sexual cosmos that you contain and embrace the possibility that this thing we call sex is a worldly version of a vast universal life force energy that finds many forms of expression on Earth, but really wants and needs to be itself. So this is your fundamental underlying nature. And encountering the fundamental underlying nature of the people that you connect with, All of the relational, political, and sexual propaganda of our times is, well, men are not really men, and women are not really women, and men and women have no business doing anything together, and if it isn't queer, it isn't good, and all this stuff. Well, yeah, there's the part of you that is the deep, profound, underlying, is actually that underlying sexual nature, and you want to meet others male or female, as who they really are at actual full strength, not in some kind of cleaned up and decorated, you know, put a bow tie on it kind of way. This is really, you know, you crave this human encounter, which is a deep emotional, hormonal, sexual human encounter. It's good for you. It helps you get out of the confusion and remember and actually live who you really are. All right, signing off from Harshaw House. It's about 10:30 on Friday morning. If you have any questions, type them into the comments or send me an email. cs@planetwaves.net. Lots of love, and bye for now.